right now.
This is
2FM's Game On. Big thanks to Demi and Mikey for taking us through the afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 22nd of October, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock, Declan Hannan reflects on his epic career as a limerick hurler. Damien Lawler brings us all the other Gaelic Games news. Ellen Keane has been chatting to Grainne Walsh on her world boxing bronze medal. And John Fallon is here to talk all things soccer. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. You can WhatsApp us on 0871879200 or on X at Game On 2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome along. There are already a couple of games underway in the Champions League. Carabag are leading Athletic Club by goal 2-0, 21 minutes played there. And Galatasaray are 1-0 up against Bodo Glimt. I'm delighted to say that Ellen Keane and John Fallon are with me in studio. They will be with me throughout the programme. And very conveniently, Ellen Keane, we have some swimming news to bring our listeners. And it is about Ellen Walsh. Not to be confused with Ellen Keane, both swimmers. So fresh from winning her four medals at the World Aquatics World Cup, she's been named in the Ireland team for the European Short Course Championships in Poland. So Ellen Walsh continues to reach new heights. She's going really well, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. She's deadly. Every time she gets in the water, she just seems to be breaking Irish records. She's doing a little tour of the States at the moment with Mona, and they've been to two World Cups so far. They've got Toronto next up. So, and then obviously the World Championships later on in the year. So like any time Ellen gets in the water, she just does a phenomenal job. She loves racing. She represents her club really, really well. So yeah, I just think the future is so bright for her.
Yeah, exciting times for swimming. In football, the big game tonight, well, if you're a Liverpool fan, the big game is Eintracht Frankfurt against Liverpool. Lots of other Champions League games on as well, and we'll talk about them a little bit later on. We'll also reflect on some of last night's big results, but it is a big night for Liverpool. They are in desperate need of a win, John Fallon.
Crisis time, Marie, yes, yeah. As a Man United fan, I have to say, still in a bit of shock.
It's going to turn down your microphone right now.
Too late now. So, yeah, it's I suppose it's really it's been a season of extremes. Probably got some lucky results at the start and have been unfortunate in some recent games, so I don't think it's quite a full blown crisis. So still think they probably have the strongest squad in the Premier League. But
Arne Slot doesn't know what to do with them.
That's the thing. That's it's just really trying to, does he know his best 11? Doesn't seem to be the case, even with Wirtz on Sunday, the way it worked out. So, yeah, a lot of talent there. And when you're adding so many players to a successful team, that is, it's probably an evolution that's going to take a bit of time. But, yeah, four defeats in a spin. It's big night tonight.
Yeah, very much so. I think because there was so much build-up as well to the season for Liverpool off the back of last season, and then adding all of those big-name players and the Isak saga as well, the expectations were high. And unfortunately for them, they've hit a bit of a speed bump. Yeah. We will chat a little bit more about that, because the team news is going to be very, very interesting when it does come out. But now it is that time of year in Gaelic games when players decide to hang up the boots. And one of them is Declan Hannan. We're going to hear a little bit from him. We're also going to get Damien Lawler's view on the legacy that he is going to leave. But before we speak to Damien, Declan Hannan has been speaking to Marty Morrissey this evening.
Declan Hannan, congratulations on an amazing hurling career over 15 years. Now that you've retired, I mean, you know yourself, you must have amazing memories.
Yeah, thanks very much, Marty. Great memories, I suppose, going back through the years and the different teammates and the different management teams. There's plenty of stories to tell. Looking back, fantastic days, you know, with friends, family. But of course, like in the middle of that, there's plenty of tough days as well that, you know, you probably often said, God, is it worth it all? But I suppose that's what makes sport such a beautiful thing, that it's not always plain sailing. And you know, I suppose those hard days made the good days a bit sweeter.
Can you remember getting the call up when you were just, what, 17 years of age?
I think Donal O'Grady was the manager at the time, and I was doing my leaving cert, and I'd say Mum and Dad were probably saying concentrate on the books or whatever, but we gave it a go, and look, it was the start of a nice journey for myself. Plenty of ups and downs along the way, so yeah, Donal O'Grady was the first phone call anyway.
You started as a forward, so when did they move you back to the half-back line?
I'd say when they realised I wasn't a good forward. I'd say 2017 when John came in, and Paul Conor, and I suppose they said, give it a go, I suppose, see what happens. And Yeah, look, sure, when I was underage, I suppose I was more of a back than a forward. But look, to be honest, if you're asked to play anywhere with Limerick or your club or whatever team you're involved in, you just have to do it and do it as best you can and see what happens. So, look, touch wood for us, it worked out okay.
Can you look back and reflect and say, my God, we didn't think this was going to happen to us, because your record is incredible. Six Munster Championships in a row, five All-Irelands, you being the record holder in terms of the most All-Ireland winning captain in terms of senior hurling. Did you envisage all this was going to happen?
No, you couldn't have really. I just remember being at home and poking around with your brothers and you pretending you're in the Gaelic grounds or Turles or Crow Park or whatever, just dreaming of getting there someday. And, you know, it was tough at times in Limerick and we were struggling to get over games and get through games. But I suppose you just have to keep going and, you know, keep ploughing away and see where it takes you. And lucky for us, you know, once we made that breakthrough in 18, I suppose it gave us the confidence to kind of to say we are good enough to compete at the highest level. And, you know, what happened afterwards has been sensational for the county. And look, we're just so proud to represent our family and the county and everything like that. And, you know, they're great days. So, yeah, just, again, very, very lucky.
The All-Ireland in 2018, to lift the Niamh McCarthy after 45 years, last time was 73. What was that like, that moment? Is it still up at number one in terms of your own personal joy?
I think it has to be, yeah. Like, there was such an outpouring of emotion from, I think, in particular the older generation that had been following Limerick for so long, and there'd been plenty of bad days, that to just get over the line and for Lee McCarthy Cup to come back to Limerick after so long, I think that will always be number one. I also do think the COVID year was interesting. You know, it was just our group the whole time at training. It was just our group going to games, just our group in Croke Park. Actually, you saw a photo earlier on today. It was an empty Croke Park, obviously, after the 2020 final. And it was just the whole team and management after getting a photo in the middle of the pitch. And, you know, there was something beautiful about that as well. But look, you could talk about a lot of good days. So look, those two are probably the main ones anyway.
Six Munster Championships in a row. As a Limerick man, as you know, being from the province of Munster, the Munster Hurling Championship has its own gravitas. But to do six in a row, remarkable.
Yeah, but like, I suppose, as players, and it sounds so boring like that, we just took it game by game. And, you know, we scraped by a lot of games. You know, it's as if we were winning all these games by 10, 15, 20 points or anything like that. You know, I remember in 2023... in the Gaelic grounds, we played Cork and we won by a point. If it was a draw, I think we were out of the championship. You know, we obviously came up against Clare and went to extra time numerous times, or went down to the wire numerous times in those games. So, you know, they're very much nip and tuck, but look, six in a row of Munster Championships is unbelievable. And again, like, just so lucky to have been a part of that. And I don't know, it's just very proud, like.
So how do you feel today? Was this a difficult choice to retire?
Look, it's, I suppose my life outside of hurling is busy. Probably in Dublin a lot now, so when you look at it that way, it wasn't. But, you know, it's something you've loved for so long and you've journeyed with so much of your best friends for so long that you'll miss that, of course. You'll miss the camaraderie and the relationships that you've built up over the years. But life goes on. You have to move on to the next thing and, yeah, plenty of exciting things to come as well.
You're going to miss it, aren't you, Declan? I mean, your life from 17 to 32, 15 years playing with Limerick, and that whole intercounty scene is now over.
Of course you'll miss it. Like, I won't miss running around Rakeel in December and January or anything like that, but as I said, you'll miss the crack, and as I said, your best buddies are in there and you're so used to meeting them five, six times a week that, you know, that's probably over now, that you'll meet them sporadically, which is very sad, you know, to be honest. They're a great bunch of young men and... I'm very proud to call them friends. So from that point of view, 100% we'll miss that.
You do realise that what you achieved, what and your team achieved, I think has given great life and pride to the people of Limerick. I mean, they just seem to be bouncing around the place with a step ever since you arrived on the scene. That's a huge, huge psychological thing and a huge impact.
Yeah, I think so. I think after 2018, it definitely gave the county and the city and the people a lift. And a boost confidence-wise, even for us as players, you know, it gave us a confidence I don't think we ever thought we had. So it's amazing what sport can do and what sport can do to a city and to the people. And I suppose I could take this opportunity to say thanks to every single person in Limerick, young and old, who followed us throughout the years. Good days, bad days and everything in between. They're amazing. And I hope they've enjoyed the journey as much as I have anyway.
I know I probably asked you a moment ago, but was this difficult for you to say, I'm ending this, this has been my life, but I'm closing that chapter?
It wasn't, Marty. It's been part of your life, I suppose, but can't go on forever. I can't look back and say it didn't work out well. So I'm lucky, you know, I've got to spend hours upon hours with some of my best friends, spending great days, heartache with them, experienced a lot. And to do that in 15 years, you know, I can't, I don't know, it's sad, but life goes on. We'll move on and get on to the next thing.
What's Louise's reaction? Is she delighted to have a little bit more of you?
So we could end up killing each other at some stage with all the extra free time now, but no, we're busy. Look, it's great. We're still so young and have a lot of living still to do, so very much looking forward to that as well.
Well, on behalf of all the GA people, whether they're from Limerick or not, I'd say Declan Hannan, you've been outstanding and an outstanding ambassador for Limerick and hurling, and what you achieved was remarkable. So well done, and enjoy the next chapter of your life. Well done.
Thank you very much, Marty. Cheers.
So that was Declan Hannan speaking to Marty Morrissey. Damien Lawler joins us now on the line. Damien, what a servant Declan Hannan was to Limerick. How big of a legacy is he going to leave?
Absolutely massive, Marie. I remember meeting him on an away trip, a GAA trip some years ago. I think he was 17 years of age, maybe 18. And I couldn't really be but impressed with the way he handled himself. He went around to all of us, introduced himself as if we didn't know who he was anyway, but carried himself really, really well. Started off life in the intercounty sphere as a forward, you know, had success with the Harty Cup, you know, Fitzgibbon Cup as well. But started off intercounty, Marie, in the forward line. And you know, it was going well there, maybe one or two tough days under free taking duties. And for me, his leadership then was redefined by the way he finished off his career. Like a heart of their defence, 5-time All-Ireland winning captain, 7 Munster medals, 15 seasons with Limerick, hurling's most decorated captain of all time. Incredible, really. And there's a 2 or 3 National League medals there as well. And I guess his pivotal moment was, you know, being the captain the day that they ended the 45-year drought. He's over 60. I think it's 65 championship appearances. And again, for a guy who lined out in 2010 in the half-forward line, he developed, in my opinion, into one of the game's finest centre-backs. So whenever there's a team of the last decade or two that being picked, he's definitely right up there for the, you know, the pivotal role, really. And I think he'd play away with it there now for the next few years. A quiet man, an unassuming guy. A no-fuss player, I'd say. Always had the ability at centre-back to get into the pocket, pick off a lovely pass. You never had bells and whistles over it, but just did the right things at the right time and well capable of scoring as well. So overall, huge legacy, Marie.
Yeah, he was transformational, really, just from a leadership perspective, the way he was able to get that team to the heights that they did and on such a consistent basis. But for me, the thing that stood out, Damien, was his temperament. He just seemed to be, as you said, unassuming, but nothing seemed to faze him as well.
No, and even talking to him, Marie, I'm sure you've interviewed him as well a few times, like he'd just take everything in his stride. I wouldn't necessarily guess he'd be a type of leader with huge amount of voices raised in the dressing room or even many words, to be honest with you. But just in terms of the respect that all the lads, the Limerick lads, had for him was incredible. I mean, he just must have led by actions on and off the field the whole time. And I guess now that he's retired, we probably will hear a few stories about those leadership and maybe the way he looked after lads on and off the field. But then again, Marie, you know, he had been through a lot himself as well. He was like a wonder kid coming through the ranks, thrust into a spotlight at a very young age. As I said to you, when you're the free taker at that age and it's not going well instantly, well, it fairly went instantly, but maybe early on he had a few turbulent days. To bounce back the way he did, absolutely incredible. But I mean, we've interviewed him over the years and we've chatted away to him. Very quiet, unassuming, humble lad. So you can just imagine what he produced on the field of play. You know, an ever-present, and even this year coming back from injury, brought off the bench several occasions just to try and, I suppose, steady the team. And there was a lot of flamboyant players in that team. There was a lot of diehard defenders. Maybe he was the perfect link man in a way, dropping back deep and setting up play then all around the field, but well able to pick off 2 or 3 points from play from centre-back or the half-back line as well.
So Damien, from Limerick to Clare, you have some good news for Clare fans, I hear.
Yeah. Shane O'Donnell, I spoke to him earlier today, Marie, and we'll hear from you now in a moment, but I guess the chat was kind of wide-ranging enough in terms of anytime you're talking to Shane O'Donnell, it is wide-ranging anyway, in my opinion, because we just started off there with the chat about his club Air Oak, and I suppose the absolute joy of their renaissance, Marie, thereafter doing performing heroics in your own county, and he won a first clear senior hurling title in 35 years, and then the footballers came to the fore a few weeks later. Only became the second club in Clare to do the double. So we were speaking to Shane at the AIB GAA Club Championships launch, and they're getting ready for Road now, and Munster, I think, to play the winners of the Tipperary final on Sunday. But then, I suppose, principally, what people wanted to hear then was his plans for next year, because having fought injury the way he did this year, he dropped a couple of hints it might be his last season. But then having tasted the high of a county title, and he's still only 31 and he's still on top of his game, I think all the indications then, Marie, was that he'd make himself available for selection next year if Brian Lowen would have him. But, you know, a very, very interesting character, as we'll hear now.
Yeah, it's been an incredible couple of weeks. I think initially it was kind of more relief than anything else. I think we were just so delighted to get over the line. A lot of harder years, like a lot of clubs. But yeah, it was definitely relief was the initial emotion. And since then, it's just been kind of enjoying it. Obviously, the footballers had their job to do the week after. And then in the last week, enjoying the double, a lot of players involved in both. It's just been incredible. I think a total outpouring of emotion from not just the players, just kind of everyone around the club. It's almost like an opportunity for people to come back to the club in some ways, to get back and involved with the club, or to be come back to the clubhouse and just to enjoy that kind of success. And I think it really brings that entire group together. Obviously, there's people who are involved in everything that's going on in the club week in, week out. We're one club as well. So across the Camogie's women's football, hurling football, they're involved every week in some capacity. But then there's the more people who are more tenuously connected to the club who might have kind of dropped off. And it's really an opportunity for them, I think, to come back in. So you see people that you haven't seen in so many years that maybe trained you in underage or were a selector or in some underage team or something like that. And they're the kind of people that it really brings back into the club. And I think the last couple of weeks has just been almost a renaissance for the club, having this it's not new blood, but this kind of new energy around the clubhouse and around everything going on in Aireoch.
Also as well, Shane, I suppose the fact that 2025 Clare, after winning the All-Ireland, didn't quite hit the same heights again, I suppose that's another reason and motivation to come back for 2026 to try and maybe atone for this year.
Definitely, James. I think coming out of 2024, after winning, there was a number of us in the Clare panel that were saying, we'll do one more year and then that's it, really. And I think coming to the end of the Clare campaign this year, when we realised we were out the week of the Limerick game, I was still under the impression that we were all kind of wrapping up, and that I kind of accepted that this is going to be my last game. And then I turned to, I think it was Davey Mack, and I was like, said something to the effect of, God, it's tough to do your final Clare session, isn't it? And he was just like, no, I'll be back next year. I was like, and he had told me 100% under no circumstances he was going again. So then I kind of had to reevaluate if all the players my kind of vintage were going to be going again, that maybe there was another year in it. And yeah, after the disappointment, it just would have been really difficult to leave it at that. Now, like I said, there's a number of physical kind of barriers and hurdles I have to get through to actually be able to put myself in contention to be in any way useful for next year, but the intention is there anyway to be involved.
So that was Shane O'Donnell speaking to Damien a little bit earlier on at the AIB Club Championship launch in his club Aireoch, as we heard, are flying the flag for the Banner County in both codes. A fantastic achievement. Damien, let's talk about the GPA and their annual membership survey. So they've brought out their latest survey. They got 3,676 responses. For you, what stood out in the survey?
Well, the surveys are standing out for me, Marie, anyway, because they're very well placed. And I tell you why. They brought one out earlier in the year about the economic impact that intercounty GEA players were having on the Exchequer and on Irish society. And I suppose on what intercounty players contribute to the Irish finances. And, they did quite a bit of lobbying after that survey, but it got huge traction around the place. GEA did one similar themselves. But you saw then that the intercounty grant for those players rose quite significantly, as Shane O'Donnell spoke about. So I think the surveys are there with meaning. And this time around, no doubt about it, the intended message is that they want to protect the welfare of elite amateur players in an increasingly professional environment. They want proper standards. They want fair reimbursement for out-of-pocket expenses. They've got that now, or at least some way towards it. I still think it could be more than what they got, actually. They want genuine rest periods and opportunities then to grow both on and off the field. So I think they're going okay in a lot of those areas. But what they're looking for now is an inter-county campaign that will run for no more than 7 months, with a split-season model also favoured by the majority. Now, bear in mind, Marie, that the survey was nearly 4,000 players. nearly 2,500 male and nearly 1,500 female, and 92% of the membership wants no more than 7 months of the year for inter-county action, and then nearly 90% of them are in favour of the split season model. So that's okay, but then you bear in mind that in pre-season competitions are filtering back into play now as well, and there's a return to training date for November the 21st for inter-county players. The GPA are looking for a six-week pre-season and no more than that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all this stacks up, Marie, because if your pre-season is coming back maybe late December or early January, your 7 months then are bringing you really no further than July. And as we know from 2027 onwards, there is the possibility then of the All-Ireland Finals being shoved back by maybe 1 week and maybe two. So you are going to have that conflict. That looks to be the next thorn in the side is the cut-off point for the All-Ireland series. And bear in mind, if the All-Ireland football final is not completed by the second week in August, you're going to have to fit in the ladies' football and the Camogie finals around that. And that could mean extending female inter-county season to 8 months or possibly even beyond that. So that's not what the GPA want. Their survey was definitely brought out for a reason. And to me, they look to be giving early notice that they're not going to have any great pushback in terms of the All-Ireland final as dates being played. So that's what really strikes me about it, Marie. It's a 7 month inter-county season is the maximum that they can sustainably commit to. But would that include their pre-season training and the pre-season competitions? So they reckon anyway it's going to reduce the demands on players and lower costs for county boards. So that's what their argument is.
Okay, well, I suppose it does make sense. Very hard to be so committed all of the time to the sport that's essentially your hobby. So let's move on to Dublin and their appointment of Johnny Cooper as the under-20 boss. This is going to be his first managerial role. Was it a case, Damien, that they needed to populate some of these former players into these underage teams? I know that they haven't reached the highs at underage level of late at Dublin.
Yeah, well, in fairness, Marie, like we had spoke previously that there was a lot of kind of a critique out there that, you know, not enough players were coming back into the fold. But this time around, Johnny Cooper, a two-time All-Star, he really retired 3 years ago, multi All-Ireland winner. But he's bringing back the likes of Michael Darren McCauley with him, the Ballyboden player. So he replaces Kieran Farrelly. It was a back-to-back semi-final defeats to Louth for Kieran's team in charge. And Johnny Cooper's been a student of leadership, I think, since he retired from the intercounty playing scene. And I think there was an expected collaboration there with Ger Brennan and their coaches in supporting the senior group's long-term ambitions. So they've taken off maybe probably the immediate pressure upon themselves, and they've maybe looked at more of a developmental role. But the harsh reality is you can dress it up any way you want. The Dublin underage scene has not necessarily produced what it should have had in hurling or football over the last decade or so. And with the amount of clubs and resources and numbers, they should be doing a lot better. You know, teams that maybe wouldn't have any business beating them have pushed them very, very, very hard and beaten them at underage, minor and under 20 level. So Johnny is a big job in his hands, but I think he's looking at it in a fairly holistic kind of a setup. And it is great to see former players coming back in, because it's been said that not enough of those players have moved back into it. County board sources tell me that they have been asked from time to times. Other players then will maybe come on the media and maybe lament the lack of success at underage level. But now Johnny Cooper is willing to put his name forward and go for it. And look, he's an out and out Nafina man, an out and out Dublin man. He'll know the talent all around the place. And as I said, he's been a student of leadership there for the last few years anyway. And it's an exciting time for him. And I think Dublin really do need to make a few statements underage. You can't just keep depending on the championship to roll in numbers into their senior squad.
And Damien, just finally then, Philly Ryan was laid to rest in Clonmel this afternoon. A very emotional time for not just everyone in Tipperary GAA, but for the GAA community as a whole.
Yeah, Marie, it's just been a very upsetting few days, to be honest with you. And the reality here is you're saying goodbye to one of the most iconic figures in Tipperary football, a hugely respected football figure around the country. But more importantly, you're saying goodbye to a husband and a dad. And he was a lot of things, but the most important thing for me was the nicest guy you could meet. I've been ringing him. I've been interviewing him. I've been friendly with him for 30 years plus, Marie. I've never heard a bad word said about the lad. He was an absolute ball of fire to watch as a goalkeeper. I love watching him, an unbelievable shot stopper. He played in three Munster finals. You know, he won five county medals. He gave probably 17 years playing with Tipperary and a lot longer playing for Clonmel Commercials. More importantly, though, it's going to be really sad to not have him around the place. Marie, the GAA is full of brilliant people, but he was the best of the best. It's horrible to see it. And I just want to pay, I suppose, on behalf of all of us here in RT Sport, our deepest sympathies to the Ryan family and Shane, his son, is the current Tip goalkeeper. And, you know, he'll carry on the torch there and he'll do his dad proud like he always did as well.
Yeah, very well said, Damien. And we echo all of those sentiments as well. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
Thanks, Marie.
RTE 2FM. This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. Galatasaray have doubled their lead against Bodo Glimt. It is 2-0 to them and half-time. It's almost half-time in the other Champions League game. Athletic Club have equalised against Karabag 1-1 there. Ellen Keane is still with me in studio. And Ellen, you've been out and about. You went and interviewed Irish boxer Gráinne Walsh.
I did. I had the absolute pleasure of interviewing Gráinne Walsh. He's recently come home with a bronze medal from the World Championships recently, and we just had a great chat. Now, a lot of people mightn't realise, but Gráinne has had such a rocky road to getting to this point. I think she nearly thought it was a gold medal qualifying for the Olympics last year, and then to take what she learned at the Olympics last year and progress this season to finally make it on the podium, 30 years old with a bronze medal, part of the Irish boxing legacy now. And we just had such a great chat.
Okay, well, let's hear now from Gráinne Walsh speaking to Ellen.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Right, let's talk about inside the ring. So bronze in the 65 kg weight category after beating the Olympic silver medalist from Paris last year. Talk to me about the moment that you realized after many years you had finally secured a world championship medal.
Yeah, God, it's just mad. Even hearing you reading that back, it's like that happened in another lifetime. Like, but yeah, there's been so many ups and downs. Like, you're familiar enough with my story, and like a career in sport in general, there's so many ups and downs, and no one has it plain sailing. And like any good story, there's always that bit of downtime where you're trying to regroup and, you know, climb the ladder back up to the top again. So, you know, it's just one of those kind of snakes and ladders things. But I knew going to the World Championships that I had actually learned so much from, particularly from Paris last year. I only had one fight in Paris and I underperformed. And there's many reasons I can kind of put it down to. I just didn't show up on the day. But having qualified 5 weeks before Paris, I found it really difficult to kind of regroup and get going again, whereas I felt like my golden moment was nearly when I qualified because of all the things I'd been through.
Yeah.
But I learned so much from the whole experience in Paris, and I was eager to put it into practice then at the World Championships. And someone actually asked me before I went, you know, what does success look like for you going to these worlds? And I probably would have had a different answer a couple of years ago. You know, I always was like, oh, I have to win the gold, I have to do this, have to do that. But like, I kind of just went into the worlds with the mentality of I just want to enjoy every bit of it and like really be present, because when I've been at my most present and grounded at competitions, that's when the best version of me comes out. So it's easier to say that now as I'm sitting on a chair, but you know, like, that's kind of what I've learned throughout the years, is just to try and enjoy the whole journey as much as I can. All the good days and the bad days, because the bad days make you appreciate the good days a bit more. So
how do you manage to stay grounded? Do you have any techniques while you're away and competing?
Another thing that I've learned throughout the years and through all my injuries was that I had to have very honest conversations with myself when I was injured, and like, what was triggering the negative thoughts in my mind, and when I was missing out on things, what was making me feel worse was actually watching what I was missing out on social media. And I found that was just that was one of the main triggers for me, because you know yourself, like, social media is everyone's highlight of the best parts of their day and the best parts of their life, really. And that's all well and good when things are going great. But when they're not going so great, you don't really want to be seeing how great a time everybody else is having. That may sound selfish, but I just had to really look after myself in those moments. And I have found that that's been a massive coping thing for me now, being in competition, is like, I've made the mistakes before of I win a fight and, oh, it's making the headlines and my ego loves reading about myself. Like, this is me a couple of years ago, but I've just come to realize now that, like, my circle is really small and the people who were there for me when I had nothing are the people that are going to be with me when I have, you know, things to bring home from competitions too. So, yeah, coming off social media has been a huge thing for me in competition because it just keeps my focus on where it needs to be. And then afterwards, all that stuff will still be there when all is said and done and when I'm home from competition and I can do as much of that as I want. But when I'm in competition, I try to just keep my 2 feet on the ground. I bring my colouring book and my colours away with me and I'm doing Duolingo and all those random bits and bobs that are not doom scrolling on social media. So that's one massive thing that I've learned throughout the years that seems to be working so far.
Oh my God, that like is such an important lesson that you learned. I kind of found that the same with myself, like when I was away in Tokyo, that when I removed myself from social media and I just kind of focused on really mundane things, it yeah. kind of helped me stay in the moment. Is that kind of like a message that you kind of try and share with maybe the younger generation? Because as you said, like you said something along the lines of it being selfish to not want to watch other people's success, but like you're actually minding yourself by doing that. So how is that selfish?
Yeah, I've always kind of been a bit of a people pleaser throughout my life. But I think as an athlete and particularly an individual athlete, you do really have to put yourself first in situations like that. And I'm not a selfish person by nature in any way, but when things aren't going good and you see things that are actually affecting you, you do have to look after yourself first. Because I wasn't even able to be a good teammate or I wasn't able to be a good friend to people because I wasn't looking after myself. So I feel like I'm a better person for other people to be around when I'm looking after myself, if that makes sense. But yeah, it definitely is something that I try to share. And look, hindsight is great. And like when you get older, you get all this wisdom and from all your kind of the downfalls, you do end up learning what works for you. But I do try and share my experiences and be as honest and transparent as I can, because I definitely have learned things the hard way. But again, I do agree that like my parents trying to give me advice all through my life, and there's only a certain amount of it that you actually listen to it, and then you end up realizing, okay, they were right when they gave me that advice. But sometimes it takes you to actually go through the hardship and come out the other side to realize those lessons.
Yeah, it's so annoying when you realize they were right all along, isn't it?
Oh, it's so, imagine how annoying it is as the parent trying to tell them and you're banging your head off a stone wall, like. But then you ended up realizing you're like, okay, right, I see where you were coming from with that.
Yeah, but it nearly makes you kind of appreciate the relationship a little bit more, because they finally understand that you understand, and then there's like that mutual agreement. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, exactly.
You spoke about your injuries and kind of like the hard times that you had. Could you just like share a little bit more in detail? Because obviously I would be aware of it, but just for the listeners.
So... We don't have time to discuss all of them, but I'll briefly run through it. No, so my dad always said to me when I was growing up, because I came from a soccer background, like that was my original kind of pathway in sport, that I wanted to be a professional soccer player. Ended up wanting to be like Katie Taylor, put on a pair of gloves, never look back. Anyway, my dad always said to me that I would be able to succeed if I was lucky enough to not get badly injured. So anyway, I never had any injuries. And then in 2020, the start of 2020, just before the Olympic qualifier, I ended up getting injured. I ruptured the ligament in my right thumb. And for 3 years, I ended up having 5 of the exact same injuries, 4 of which required surgery. So you can imagine how difficult that was. And I genuinely thought I was the most unfortunate person on planet Earth. I blamed everything. I'm born on Friday the 13th. I thought that was why this was happening to me. But it turns out, when I look back at it all, and I missed out on the whole Tokyo thing, but every single time an injury happened, I thought it was the worst thing in the world. But when I look back at it all, each of them taught me a different lesson and showed me that like that wasn't my time, or it was trying to steer me down a different path, but like I still had things to learn and it changes to make. And essentially you end up finding out how badly you do actually want it. And if you don't, that's okay as well, but at least you'll have that answer. And that was, I honestly, in those 3 years, I learned more about myself than I could in a full lifetime. So I look back and I'm actually really grateful for all the things that happened to me and the resilience that it's given me. And it's given me a great story to be able to share with people and to prove to people that, like, if you actually believe and you have a team around you that believe in you, you really can get there. So I don't have any regrets about any of it, because I look back on it with nothing but really gratitude, to be honest.
Yeah, and it kind of makes you appreciate when you do get there a lot more, doesn't it?
Oh my God, yeah. Like, when I even think of going to the Tokyo, before the Tokyo cycle or before the Tokyo qualifiers, and I think of like how ready I was then in comparison to Paris, I was nowhere near ready to qualify for the Olympics. And like, I'm able to admit that now, but obviously at the time I was like, oh my God, like it was the worst thing in the world because I thought I was ready, but there was no way I was ready when I look back and compare it to how ready I was for Paris. And that's something that you don't ever see at the time. And even when I see younger athletes now getting injured and stuff, and they're asking for advice, and I asked all the same questions, you know, my man and dad were always saying to me, oh, what's for you won't pass you. And if I had heard any more of them, I was going to flip. But turns out, again, they were all right, because I realised that the Olympics was for me, and I just needed to wait that little bit longer and work that little bit harder and make tweaks along the way. And like you said about that appreciation, I just, when that actually happened for me, like, all of it made sense, and I was just so grateful. Like,
how did you not quit though? So like, it's fair enough getting injured once, twice, maybe a third time, but the fact that the same thing kept happening over and over again in different ways, like, how did you not quit? How did you keep going?
I don't know, because when I look, I was trying to explain this. I was in a school yesterday explaining my story, and the kids had the same questions. They were like, oh, so how did you actually not just turn around and think that this was a sign not to do this anymore? But like, after the fourth injury, like, if I had a crystal ball at the start and could see all these injuries ahead of me, I would have just been like, okay, I'm not ready, I'm not able to go through all that. But when you get injured once, you don't anticipate it happening again. So I was just picking myself back up and trying to get better and improve and whatever. And then it did happen again. And I was like, right, there's no way it could happen again. And then it did. So it was just this recurring thing that I just felt like, what am I actually going to do to break this whole cycle of me being so unlucky? But having the people around me that I had, and like, after the fourth injury, the fourth surgery, my surgeon was saying to me, he was like, Grainne, like, this is not sustainable for your hand health going forward for the rest of your life, because like, I can't just keep operating every time you get a knock on your hand. Like, that's not going to happen going forward. So he was like, if this happens again, it's the end of your career. And obviously I was terrified when I heard that, because I was 26, hadn't been to the Olympics, I hadn't even touched the surface of my potential really. So that was a very scary conversation to have. And then it did happen another time. But the last time, the little silver lining was the fact that I didn't need surgery. So it wasn't actually curtains on my career. So I'm technically still on my last life, but we're not going to talk about that because, you know, we're rolling with the punches, as they say, at the moment. But yeah, I don't know how I didn't give up. But having the people around me and the belief from my family and my coach and stuff was kind of what kept me going. And because I didn't feel like I had given enough to boxing, but my hand was just this massive thing that was stopping me at that time. But I knew that I had the mentality to get there had my hand have held up. Do you know what I mean? Because a couple of years ago, I wasn't as focused as I needed to be when I had my full health and my body was in tip top shape. I didn't have the mentality. So I just needed to ride that really long wave to when the two aligned, and then everything happened for me. Thank God.
What did your coach say whenever you got injured, or how did your coach kind of keep you believing in yourself?
Yeah, he was really good at like hiding how he felt, because I knew he was concerned about like, oh my God, how am I going to keep her going when I don't even know what to be saying to her to motivate her, kind of thing. But the final icing on the cake, this is a hilarious story. So after the five injuries, and I was on my way back, and it was January of 2023. It was just before the Nationals in January 23. And this was in the lead into the Paris qualifier. So I needed to win the Nationals in order to be in a chance of going to Paris. And 2 weeks before, I had a sore back, and my coach, me and him were arguing on the phone because I was like, I'm just going to rest this evening. I'm going to train tomorrow. I'll have a bath and whatever. And he was like, no, go out and do 15 or 20 minutes. So I did. I went out, did my 15, 20 minutes, and I left two dumbbells, 10 kg cast iron dumbbells on a shelf. And I went to turn around and one of them rolled off and hit my baby toe. Right. Okay. Ended up breaking my baby toe and needed actual pinky toe surgery. And I thought this was going to put me out of the tournament that was coming up. And he felt terrible because he was the one that was after forcing me to train. But ended up, everything worked out and I ended up winning the Nationals. But that was just, it was just a mad story to think that I had come through five hand injuries and then a broken baby toe just to finish it off.
Do you think that might have been a moment for your coach as well, where he realized, okay, Grainne actually knows her body now. Like, if she says she needs rest, I also have to listen to her.
Exactly. Because before, like when I was younger and stuff, I did obviously take all of his advice but like after a while, you know yourself from being in sport, like you do end up just knowing exactly how your body ticks and what it needs. And it's not necessarily what works for one will work for everyone, but you do learn what makes you tick. And at that moment, I knew that I shouldn't have done an extra session, but obviously we can laugh about it and stuff now, but he felt terrible. Like he really felt terrible.
What did you say to each other after you won the bronze medal?
Oh, yeah. So he's a very, like, my coach, this is my coach now. He's not with the Irish team or anything anymore, but
yeah,
he's my coach from home. And like, he's a very tough, loving, like he wouldn't give compliments or anything. Like he's Eastern European, so he's very stern and, you know, enough is never really enough. But like, I went back to the club and I went to see the kids and all with my medal. And like, he said a few words about like, you know, Grainne's been working away for years and she's so determined, and said all these lovely things that he's never, ever said to my face. So I was nearly crying when he was saying all this in front of everybody. So I knew he was really proud, but he tells everyone else how proud he is of me. He just never actually tells me. So that was lovely to hear.
Oh, that's so nice. He has to keep you in a certain box to keep you working hard.
Exactly. I can never, you know, I get humbled on the daily. So
this is 2FM's Game On.
Now, that was Ellen Keane speaking to Olympic boxer Grainne Walsh, and the full interview can be found on the Game On podcast. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We'll have team news from Liverpool, and we'll also be looking ahead to the Ireland women's big game against Belgium.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. John Fallon is with me in the studio. We're looking ahead to Ireland's big game on Friday against Belgium. It is a Nations League playoff doubleheader Friday and Tuesday. The Belgians come to town on Friday and then Ireland are away from home on Tuesday. John, give us a little bit of context around how big a game this is for Ireland.
Yes, the biggest game of the year, really, Marie. Like this, it's been a long stretch since the end of the Nations League itself, and down in Parky Cueve in June, the last game against Slovenia, where Ireland needed to win 4-0. They only won 1-0, which meant they finished in second and they were put into this promotion relegation playoff against Belgium. They're coming down from League A. So we're used to women's playoffs having a prize at the end of it, going to a tournament, whether it was Camden Park and Barbaros goal getting us to the World Cup, or else the contrast was losing to Wales last year and missing out in the Euros. Whereas this one doesn't get you directly to the tournament, but it gives you a parachute of a playoff if next year's World Cup qualification doesn't result in getting a ticket to Brazil in 2027. Okay.
They don't make it very straightforward, but I guess in simple terms, we just need to win Friday's game and then Tuesday's game and see where we're at.
Yeah.
Let's get a bit of reaction now to the upcoming game. Let's hear from Saoirse Noonan. She's been speaking to Tony O'Donoghue.
I think Carla brought you back into the setup. It was a long time that you were maybe out of favour is the wrong way of putting it, but you weren't being included in squads.
Yeah, look, I think every manager is different, aren't they? So I think for me, when I made that move to Celtic, the system looked like it suited me and I wanted to get back and scoring goals. And yeah, look, I think my first 6 months there, I hit the ground running and obviously played Champions League football. So we showed we could play against the best sides. We're not just playing in Scotland, we were playing against Chelsea, we were playing against 20, we were playing against Real Madrid. So like, you can't ignore a player that's playing those games, I think. And yeah, look, I'm so grateful for Carla for bringing me back in and then giving me the opportunity to be on the pitch.
Two important games then, home and away to Belgium. Be nice to get in the score sheet again.
Yeah, look, it's huge. It's a big week for all the team. We spoke about this morning. We need absolutely everyone. And yeah, look, I think we're all raring to go. As I said, it's been a long time coming, and the 24 players that are in right now are absolutely delighted, and we're all so privileged to be here. So yeah, Friday's going to be absolutely huge, and we all can't wait to put on the green shirt and go out there.
Can I ask you finally, your fellow Cork woman, Denise O'Sullivan, being back and hopefully fit. I mean, what a difference, and how important she can be to a team.
Yeah, look, I think we've all been probably keeping an eye on our team sheets, and when we all see her back in on the bench, I think 2 weeks ago, and then getting minutes, that's all you want to see. She's always going to be the biggest workhorse on the team, and she's always someone to look up to. And she had a tough injury, but it just shows her mindset and her willingness to do whatever she can to be in these games. And I'm sure she'll be fit and ready, and she'll do whatever it takes to play.
Do you think, from the players' point of view, from the other players, when you go, Denise is back, and breathe?
Yeah, I think she just brings a calmness. She just brings such a calmness, such a leadership, and she just gets the job done. She goes about her business. She's such a professional athlete and such an inspiration to all of us. So yeah, definitely having her in and around the camp is firstly unbelievable, and who doesn't want to play with Denise O'Sullivan?
That was Saoirse Noonan speaking to Tony O'Donoghue, and tomorrow we'll be continuing our build-up to that Belgian game, and we'll hear from Denise herself as well. So huge night in the Champions League, particularly for Liverpool, who are searching for a win. They are gone 4 games now without a win, 4 consecutive games. John Fallon, you have some very interesting team news ahead of this Eintracht Frankfurt game.
Yeah, 5 changes from Sunday's defeat to Manchester United. one of whom comes out is Mo Salah. Also, McAllister, Gravenberch, Kirkes and Bradley. In come Etiquique, Wirtz, Jones, Robertson and Frimpong. So no surprise that he's shaking up the team. I suppose the Salah omission is the eye-catching one, because he's just out of form at the moment.
Yeah, and it was very interesting to see how Etiquique and Alexander Isak could coexist. So we'll see how that plays out tonight, and tomorrow we can react to it. I'll be back from 6 o'clock here on 2FM. Keith Tracy's going to be in to talk all things Champions League. Bernard Jackman will start our rugby build up as well to those huge autumn internationals coming up, and also all the URC games. Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America, as he always does, and as I mentioned, I'll have a sit down interview with Irish football star Denise O'Sullivan. John Fallon of the Irish Examiner, thank you so much for coming in.
No problem.
Up next here on 2FM, it's the new music show.
This is 2FM.